You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 1st of November, U.S. unemployment due 2:30 this afternoon. Expected, no change, 4.1%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Alex Dace from Mthombo Wealth. Slipping U.S. beer sales, as we see in the ABM Bev results and AdCorp results. Tough market, restructuring costs. Nice business, but tough market. Garth McKenzie from Traders Corners. Top things he wishes his younger self knew. Thoughts from me, volatility next week as the U.S. finally votes. Top tip, do nothing. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. There will be no tax hikes to ensure primary surplus, Misondo vows, while SARS says there's a 300 billion rand tax gap in SA that represents collection opportunities. Business Day, Eskom says SA has enough power for the next 5 years. Latest outlook considers a moderate growth scenario in the demand for electricity. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 1.9%, NASDAQ down 2.4%. Over in the East, mixed. We've got Sydney off 0.1%, Tokyo down 1.9%, Hong Kong up 1.1% and Tencent up 3.3%. Commodities, red. Well, mostly red. Gold, 2,756. Brent is higher, 73.92. Platinum, 9.98. Palladium, $1,111 an ounce. Rand, 17.60. Bitcoin, 69,500. Top 40 opening call, green open, 430 points, 0.6% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alex Dace from Mthombo Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning time. AdCorp Holdings, they essentially are, I suppose, recruitment specialists. They're operating in South Africa and Australia. We understand why the South African business is really struggling. But they did see revenue up. They saw gross profits up, operating profits down, and restructuring costs. Your take, I mean, they even managed to pay a dividend, a slightly decreased a dividend, but still a dividend coming through.
Good morning, Simon. So, yeah, AdCorp obviously has had a very turbulent time over the last, call it, decade and a half.
Yeah.
And we know, of course, Africa GDP per capita hasn't grown since 2013, so which means the demand for employment is not really there. So that's why they're struggling. They also, under the previous management, did a lot of acquisitions, you know, funded with debt, and they got into trouble with that. But since then, they've done hard work, and now the balance sheet is actually a net cash position. And actually have paid roughly about half of their market cap, current market cap, back in dividends over the last 4 years, or 3 or so years. So things are certainly better. I think you can clearly see they are generating cash. You know, they are in a net cash position, and they are cautiously optimistic about the future. If you look at the outlook statement, they are expecting better prospects in South Africa as well as in Australia. But yeah, it's been a very, I mean, look at the share price of a longer term period. You can see it pretty much reflects what I just said.
I zoomed that chart out. It's back at late 1990 levels. 2007, it was a 45 rand share. It's a 5 rand share. It's been wild. Although it's done well in the last couple of years, as you point out, it's more than doubled over that period. Anheuser-Busch came out. The surprise, maybe it was a surprise. I mean, Corona continues to do well. That's their premium brand. Make no mistake about that. But beer sales generally, particularly in their home market, actually coming under some pressure. Is this, I mean, I don't know, is a giant beer company such as Anheuser-Busch sort of old school in the sense that British American Tobacco is, or is that actually just perfectly fine?
Yeah, so they did report, I would say, a mixed bag of results, and share price reaction to that yesterday reflected that. So it was certainly very soft volumes, but on a positive perspective, pricing was good as well as cost control. But it's clear that revenue fell well short of expectations. I mean, Pacific and Asia, I mean, volumes were down over 11%. You know, it was down also in the Middle America, over 2%, and North America was also down. So pretty much weakness across the board there. However, due to lower commodity costs, they were able to have slightly higher margins. And I think that's important to note because their margin guidance also, going forward,
Yeah.
Is a little better. So that's on the positive side. And actually delivered slightly better earnings than the market anticipated. But I would say it's a low quality beat, meaning it was mostly driven from lower tax and low interest costs. So yeah, not a great update, but I think the business is still relatively well positioned over the medium term. So they do have a lot of debt, but it's mostly fixed. So they should be able to easily pay that off over time. Yes, volumes are a little bit down. And I think that's to do with affordability problems in most of the countries. We know, of course, cost of living crisis, specifically in some of the developed markets and some emerging markets, like in Latin America, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But I think beer, I don't think it's the same as tobacco. But it's clear that tobacco volumes are coming down and will remain down. I think beer, there will be a bit of recovery if there's better economic prospects and so forth. But there's no doubt they need to look at other alternatives like they are doing.
Yeah.
For example, they do have non-alcoholic products also selling, because perhaps the younger generation is likely to drink perhaps a little bit less than we have been accustomed to. So that is a bit of a challenge, but they're trying to offset that by going to higher premium products, which are higher margin in a way. So it's offset the volumes with higher margin, and then hopefully it can still be relatively flat and so forth. So, but yeah, they are the world's dominant beer companies, no doubt about it. They've got great brands. But yeah, we all know things aren't that great economically in a lot of countries, and as a result, the results will fix that.
Yeah, and I take your point. It is shifting things. People drinking less, people drinking other things. I commented yesterday, in the olden days, it was our granny who drank gin. Now it's the hipsters who drink gin. Alex Dayson from Bo Wealth, we'll leave that there. Appreciate the early morning. That's our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter. Is beer just old school? Or perhaps there's still space for it? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Garth McKenzie. You find him, of course, at Traders Corner. Garth, appreciate the time today. You had a birthday recently. You wrote a list of the 10 things you'd wished you'd known at 21, now that you're 45. For the record, I just had a birthday, 45, positively a youngin. We're not going to have time for all 10 of them, and folks can go to the website and find the rest. Perhaps the one that stood out to me, because I think it might have taken me longer to realize this than it did you. Growth shares over high dividend shares. I've had long a fascination with dividend shares. I love that cash flow, but I've come to appreciate, A, they don't give you the growth, they don't give you the appreciation, and certainly in the South African environment, they're not tax efficient either.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. It's excellent to speak to you again. Thanks for the opportunity. So quite right, growth shares over dividend shares. And it also took me a while to come to that realization. Earlier on in my career, I always thought, invest and get dividends and reinvest the dividends. And you achieve a compound return by reinvesting those dividends back into the stocks and earning more dividends on the dividends that you've earned, And yes, there's an element of truth to that. But there's also a caveat is that often high dividend yielding stocks are very mature businesses.
Yeah.
They've got no growth profile left, and that's why they are able to pay out most of their profits in the form of a dividend. And as a result, you tend not to get much growth in the capital value of your shares when you've got a very high dividend yield, particularly when it's a really, really high dividend paying stock. And I think back to earlier in my career, there were stocks like PPC, cement company, which was on a huge dividend yield. British American Tobacco has always been one that's been on a huge dividend yield. African Bank was a big dividend payer, which hit the wall badly and went to zero. And that's an extreme case. But the point that I'm trying to make is that your high dividend yielding stocks are very often these mature businesses. They've got no growth left in them. That's why they can pay out all the profits in the forms of dividend. But also those types of businesses are very cumbersome. They're usually very big businesses, and they're often ripe for disruption by younger players that have come along and can do things faster, better, and more efficiently. For that reason, my experience has been actually you do far better investing in growth shares, businesses that have the potential to grow their earnings significantly in the future, and businesses that reinvest their profits back into the business to achieve that growth. rather than businesses that are mature and pay out higher dividends.
Yeah, it's that mature point. And I think that's what took me a while to realize as well. The dividends are nice, but these are mature businesses. And in many cases, they're going to get usurped by the sort of up and comers. The other one, which was nothing good happens below the 200-day moving average. So that for folks who're saying, what's a 200-day moving average? It's a technical, it's on a chart. It's literally just the average price over the last 200 trading days, which is what, about a year of trading data. And you make a great point. Below that, there's just nothing happening. You don't want to be there.
Yeah, that's right. So it was Paul Tudor Jones, I think, who's credited with saying that. And it's a well-known saying, and it's good advice for the most part. The thing is, a 200-day moving average, as you said, it's a lot of trading history. I don't think it's quite a year. It's about 9 or 10 months worth of trade. But it's a long time. And it's a good indication of the direction of travel of the share's price. And if you've got an upward sloping 200-day moving average and your share's price is above the 200-day moving average, then that it just by basic maths implies that there's buying interest that's keeping that price elevated and keeps it trending higher. If the price dips below the 200-day moving average, then it's simply telling you that there's not a lot of appetite to buy the shares and there's not enough interest keeping the price higher or keeping it trending higher. So it's just an interesting filter to use to say, you know, if your shares are above the 200-day moving average, that means they're performing for you.
Yeah.
If they're below the 200-day moving average, it means they're not really performing. They're technically weak. There might be something wrong with the company, not always, but any true disaster that I've ever seen in the stock market, the shares have always dipped below the 200-day moving average a long time before the disaster hit the wall. So it's a useful filter to use. You know, some will say, yeah, but there's bargains below the 200-day moving average. And yes, there's an element of truth to that. But don't forget, you know, shares like Steinhoff and shares like EOH and African Bank that I mentioned. Now, these are all shares that collapsed and they dropped below the 200-day moving average a long time before they saw any significant selling. And it's just a good filter to use. Yeah, stay above the 200-day moving average. You're safer there.
Yeah, it's something I use. I find a stock, I like it, and I'm looking for something technical to happen. Usually I'm just looking for a simple breakout. But the other point on my checklist is, are you above or below? Because to your point, I'd never put it quite so succinctly, but it is a case of there's no good news below that 200. Best to stay away from it. Another one which really struck me, because I think a lot of folks are saying, yeah, we know Garth McKenzie. I mean, you know him as a derivative trader, most famously on BDTV for a decade or so. Active trading is not suitable for most people. And I think it's one of those things where folks are like, it's a skill we can learn, but actually maybe not.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the thing is, the CFD providers and the futures providers are now compelled by law to put a note on the top of their website about what percentage of their clients lose money. And that number is always between 70% and 80%. And that's not to say the other 20% are killing it and driving Ferraris.
100%.
It just means that those ones are not losing money, but they're not really necessarily making a whole lot either. There's a very, very, very tiny pinnacle of people in the fat end of the tail, or the thin end of the tail rather, that actually can make a lot of money trading and do it very successfully. But it's tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the people who actually go out and attempt trading can do that. And the thing that I think a lot of people don't appreciate is that it's a skill that you really need to acquire. It doesn't come easily.
Yeah.
It takes a hell of a lot more time and effort than what most people appreciate to be successful as a trader. And quite frankly, most people's personalities are actually just not cut out for active trading, and they'd be far better off just buying an index fund and investing their money in there and leaving it, quite frankly. And I just think it's an important point to mention because, yes, you're right, I'm known as a trader, I've made a life out of trading, but it's not for everybody.
Yeah,
it's really not for everybody. And I've seen far too many disaster stories of people who've lost a lot of money trading. And I've come to realize that it's actually not suitable for most people, quite frankly.
Yeah, there's a phrase out there, and I forget which way around it is, but it's the hardest easy thing you ever do. It looks so easy, but in practice, it's a whole lot tougher. And it took me 5 years of losses to get to profitable. And I still don't know why I carried on with those 5 years. I mean, I'm glad I did, but in hindsight, yeah, I was a sucker for punishment. The last one I want to touch on, and it's particularly relevant because markets are at highs. We've got US elections. We've got the whole worries. I mean, gold is heading to all-time highs. Financial doomsayers are to be ignored. You and I have been in the market long enough to have always had a lot of them out there. And sometimes they're right. Just randomly they'll be right and they'll remind you for the rest of your and their natural life. But as a rule, they're best ignored.
They are best ignored. It's like the stop clock that tells the right time twice a day.
Yeah.
You know, it's wrong the rest of the time. And I think in this day and age with Twitter and social media and whatever, the information is so much more easily dispersed. There are a huge number of financial doomsayers out there. And I think we are sort of hardwired as human beings to be more susceptible to negative news. Yeah. If we see it, we pay attention to it because it's potentially viewed as a threat to our financial well-being, you know. So it naturally piques our interest. But if you look at it, you know, the markets go up over time and we overcome things. We've overcome COVID. We've overcome financial crises. We've overcome wars.
Yeah.
All sorts of things, you know, and markets, generally speaking, over the long term do go up. And financial doomsayers, there's lots of them out there, but most of them are wrong. And they're best ignored, actually.
Yeah, and they make compelling arguments. Make no mistake about that. They make lovely, overly long YouTube videos, but they are typically wrong. And to your point, zoom out on your chart. It goes from bottom left to top right, regardless of wars, pandemics, elections, and everything else. Garth McKenzie, Traders Corners, appreciate the time. As I said, there's a whole bunch more points. You'll find that traderscorner.co.za. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
So some Friday thoughts. The U.S. election finally comes to its day of voting. That will be Tuesday. We won't get full results for a few days, maybe only by the weekend. Used to be we would wake up on Wednesday morning and pretty much know who had won. But battleground states, those have become critically important. There's a bunch of them, seven or so, and it's going to take a bit, and it's going to be messy. Trump is already claiming fraud and vote rigging without any evidence. He's only going to get even more shouty as the days move on. Markets are going to be wild. Rumors are going to be even wilder. Looking at policies, Harris largely is going to be sort of as per Biden, higher taxes for the rich. I think those tax cuts from Trump, not the ones on corporate, but the individual tax cuts expire in 2026. If Harris wins, she won't renew them. And of course, tariffs from China, which Trump started, but then Biden continued, and Harris will as well. Trump, no real policies except tariffs on everybody and mass deportation. Both will be inflationary. I mean, that is the short answer. How inflationary? I guess we find out in time, but it's going to be some level of inflationary. And the key point is that, remember, ultimately, markets go up, almost regardless of presidential policies. I was looking at a chart I found on the interwebs earlier in the week, and it shows the different terms of the different presidents. But importantly, what it doesn't do is tell you which president when. It just shows you the four-year periods. And if you're not quite sure, it's impossible to tell the difference between Republican and Democrat. The markets generally go higher. The companies on the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange find ways to work with whoever is in power. So there will be a lot of noise. There is going to be shouting. There is going to be accusations about the end of the world and all the rest. It's nonsense. They will move on. Importantly, for your portfolio, don't make any knee-jerk decisions, because the dust will settle and markets will go higher. That's it for today. I was chatting with Lanoir Bergnakabele yesterday from Perpetua Investment Managers. We've been talking about the midterm budget policy statement. Asked how you would score it. Just over 40% said could do better. Around 20% each said a decent pass or a total fail. Rest said full marks. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.